Just sit back and relax. You'll be royally entertained, for it's time for Hollywood's Open House. Hello, everyone. This is Jim Amici inviting you once again to 30 minutes of pleasure and entertainment at Hollywood's Open House. Swell entertainment by great entertainers. Listen to the music of Ray Block and his orchestra. Songs by Phil Brito. Comedy by Broadway and Hollywood's favorite comedian, Jackie Gleason. And from Hollywood Moviedom's lovely star, Anita Louise. Back again, that jovial, that wonderful, that delightful, that funny,
dashing, debonair, devil may care.
Thanks, Jack. Jackie Gleason. Yeah.
Thank you and thank you, Jim.
Jackie, a number of people have written in and want to know all about you. Where do you come from?
Well, Jim, I happen to come from the garden spot of America.
Where's that?
Brooklyn. Brooklyn, spelled backwards, is Nilcorb.
Perhaps you'd like to tell us more about yourself.
I'd be glad to, Jim. Let's start from the beginning. A little music, maestro. I was born in 1916, right next door to room 1917. I had the usual number of parents, one of each sex. As my father nervously paced the floor, he said, "Gee, I hope it's a boy or a girl." Then I was born. When my father saw me for the first time, he said, "Ow!" And so I was born. I was a sickly infant and had to suck my thumb through a tube. But the years passed, and with each passing year, I grew older. Soon I began my carefree school days.
Quiet, children, quiet. We'll now have a lesson in arithmetic. Jackie Gleason.
Yes, ma'am.
Jackie, if you had a dollar and I took half, what would I have?
A fractured skull.
What's the matter with you, Jackie Gleason? Don't you like me?
Are you kidding? Didn't I carve my initials in your forehead yesterday? And so my school days were over. I soon became a broad-beamed husk... What does broad-beamed mean? I soon became a broad-beamed husky young man. And my eyes were turned to a new horizon, Broadway.
Hey, Jackie, you been to see the new burlesque show yet?
Nah, my father told me there were things I shouldn't see in a burlesque show.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But last night I sneaked out of the house and I went anyway.
Did you see anything you shouldn't see?
Yeah, my old man.
Very, very interesting. By the way, Jackie, didn't love enter your life at any time?
Love? Jim, I wish you hadn't have mentioned that.
Oh, I'm sorry if I touched a tender spot, Jim.
Oh, that's all right. I've told you about the rest. I might as well tell all. A little music, please. It was in the cocktail lounge of Park Avenue's most fashionable restaurant. There she was, standing in the corner. Her lights were on. Her discs were revolving. I looked at her and she turned green. Purple, yellow. All the colors of the rainbow dashed through her neon veins. She was the most beautiful jukebox I had ever seen. Dynamic, electric, orthophonic. Entranced, I walked over and put a nickel in her. And she sang the song that was to become our song, Bese Me Mucho. It was then that I knew I was in love. It was the beginning of a tragic romance. That first blissful week cost me 10 years of my life, all of my self-respect, and $4.80 in nickels. Night after night, it was just Juki and I and Bese Me Mucho. Bese Me Mucho. I just couldn't get enough of her Bese Me Mucho. I knew she only loved me for my money. I knew she'd play me for a while and then cast me aside like an old shoo-shoo baby. But I was a lost soul. I couldn't resist her. Embarrassed, I'd sneak to the cashier and say, a dollar's worth of nickels, please. My friends were beginning to avoid me. They'd look at me strangely and say, here comes Gleason, look out, he'll probably want change. Whenever I was away from Juki, I'd remember all the lovely things she said to me the night before. Amor, amor. Bese me mucho, or would you rather be a pig? And that tender mad night when she had the hiccups and kept singing, it had to be you, it had to be you, it had to be... She's probably here in spirit tonight. However, one night I walked in and there she was with another man. He said he was the repairman. He was standing close to her, a glass in one hand and a can in the other. They were both getting oiled. After that, she was never quite the same towards me. At first, all she wanted was nickels. But now she wanted dimes and quarters, too. We began to have little arguments. She'd talk back to me. I'd push number three, and she'd play number four. I was running out of cash, and one night, with my last nickel, I asked her to play Bese Me Mucho. She lit up and yelled, get out of here and get me some money, too. She was giving me the needle. Then one night it happened. I had noticed that gay, vivacious Juki was slipping. Her neons were sagging. She was getting careless about changing her records. She was slowing down. As I turned to say goodnight, she said, I'll be seeing you. I looked at her, horrified, with my heart pounding. She was tilted. I phoned for the doctor. He came immediately. He shook his head and said, we'll have to operate at once. She has 4 slugs in her body. And then he took her away. The next night I went back to the place. Our place. And there was somebody new standing in Juki's corner. A loud, flashy, painted hussy. A bleached blonde with a curly maple top. She winked at me with a magic eye. And guiltily, I slipped her a nickel. Oh, I don't know why I did it. I was so ashamed. Juki in the hospital and me playing around with another machine. Finally, I went home and waited for Juki's return. But she never came back. She left the hospital and disappeared. I searched for her, but couldn't find her. I heard vague rumors of her decline from lunchroom to delicatessen, from delicatessen to candy store. And then one day I heard she was working at McGillicuddy's saloon. She had a new steel arm and a new set of waxes. I rushed down to find her. I walked into McGillicuddy's and my heart stood still. She was lying on the floor. There was a large crowd around her. I pushed them aside and said, "Give her air." How she had changed. There were circles under her eyes where people had set down wet glasses. She had lost all her color on one side and she had blown a fuse. There she was. There she was on the barroom floor. An old slot. I picked her up in my arms. I put a nickel in her. Nothing happened. I put another nickel in. Nothing happened. I shook her. "Speak to me," I cried. "Speak to me." Her light slowly went out. She was just an empty shell. She had no motor to guide her. I knew that this was the end. I pressed her close to me. Tears were running down my face. The only jukebox in the world that could ever mean anything to me was dying in my arms. And without a nickel. But before she died, I held her close to me. And I whispered, "Goodbye, Jukey." And she whispered to me, "Goodbye, Jerky."
Bill Bredow's first motion picture, The Sweetheart of Sigma Chi, featured some wonderful music. One of the songs in the picture was a really beautiful ballad. Bill sings this ballad now, and then it's heaven.
A dream is just a dream until I dream of you. And then it's heaven. The kiss is just a kiss until I'm kissing you. And then it's heaven. The ordinary things I always do with you become the most important things I'll ever do. And words are only words till you say I love you. And then it's heaven. Just a dream until I dream of you. And then it's heaven. A kiss is just a kiss until I'm kissing you. And then it's heaven. The ordinary thing I always do with you become the most important things I'll ever do. And words are only words till you say I love you.
In just a moment, we'll be back with our guests, Anita Louise, Jackie Gleason, Phil Bredow, our own Ray Block, and yours truly, Jim Amici. everyone is familiar with the fragile beauty and the sturdy talent of our Hollywood guest, Miss Anita Louise. For her appearance with us, we have a story specially written for her, a fantasy as gentle and lovely as our star herself. Hollywood's Open House presents Anita Louise, starring in The Yearning Heart, with yours truly, Jim Amici, as Robert Mason.
The rays of a full summer moon were rapidly displacing the fading daylight from the corners and crannies of the big city as a young man left the noisy streets and entered the quietness of the great park. As he hurried through the gathering darkness, he looked forward to reaching the secluded, wooded nook, which only he had so far discovered, and which he looked upon as his very own. Yet, this time he realized, when he had reached it, someone else was there. The intruder was a woman, and although he couldn't see her face and heard no sound, he had the impression that she was weeping. He stepped up quite close to the park bench on which she sat and said softly,
"I beg your pardon."
Oh,
please don't get up. I didn't mean to disturb you.
Is this your bench?
Mine? No, of course not. It belongs to anyone who happens to be sitting on it.
Oh, then if we both sit on it, it'll belong to both of us.
Exactly.
Oh, it's so lovely and peaceful here. It's just like I was sure it would be. I was sure that if I could only find this place, I would know. But I've found the place, and I still don't know. No, I'll never know. I'll never know.
Are you in trouble or something?
Trouble? Oh, no.
You were crying when I spoke to you just now, weren't you?
Was I? That's strange, because I never cry.
What's your name?
My name? Why, I don't believe I have one. Do you?
Do I what?
Have a name.
Well, yes, of course.
Oh, yes, of course. What's your name?
Robert. Robert Mason.
Robert Mason. Oh, that's a nice name.
Thank you. And now listen, haven't you better go home?
Oh, no.
Don't you know where you live?
Yes, I know where I live.
Oh, where?
With it.
What'd you say?
I live with it. But I can't go back yet. I have to keep on looking.
Well, what is it that you've lost?
I haven't lost anything. I just haven't found something yet.
This is what you call getting nowhere. Okay, I've got myself into it. Come on.
Leave here.
We'll get some coffee. It'll make you feel better, clear your mind.
Oh, you don't understand. Really, you don't. I feel all right, and my mind is perfectly clear. It's just that, well, there isn't much time now, and I have to find it. I just have to find it. I have to.
And so, without quite knowing why, Robert Mason accepted the care of the unknown girl. The infrequent park lights and then the frequent street lights revealed to him the girl's lovely, fragile features, her large, deep eyes, which seemed to be entirely black and which contrasted most strangely with the strong white of her skin and the red gold of her abundant, wavy hair. There was a shyness about her and a tenderness possessed by the very young and the very good. Almost without his feeling it, the girl had slipped her arm through his, and suddenly Robert Mason realized that she was to him no longer a problem to be solved. She was a person to be protected and cherished. They sat together in a restaurant. There were soft lights and a romantic gypsy tune.
Oh, I like it here. This is beautiful. It's like the park.
Now, please listen to me, confound it.
Are you angry?
No, but I can't go on calling you nothing. Can't you remember your name?
I haven't any name. Truly, I haven't. I'd tell you if I had one.
All right. I'll just have to give you one, I suppose.
Give me a name?
I call you Delia.
Oh, that's lovely. Like a flower.
You are like a flower, you know.
Am I?
You're like a lovely flower that blooms only at twilight and fades at dawn, so that only those who live at night ever see it.
Bloom at twilight and fade at dawn. I like that. Are you a poet?
No, certainly not.
You talk like one.
Do I?
I used to write poetry sometimes, but I always burned it. I wish now I hadn't burned it. I would like you to have read it. You would have understood.
Delia.
Yes?
You must try to tell me who you are, why you came to the park. It's very important.
Why do you talk to me like that? How can I tell you who I am? What can I say? Everything was so lovely here. Now you've spoiled it all again. All I can tell you is that I'm looking. Looking. That's all I know. Believe me. That's all I know.
So it was as the night slipped by, and as they walked and walked through the deserted streets of the city, Robert Mason knew that never again would he ask the girl he called Delia who she was or where she came from. And then, when the night was fading into dawn, he stood with her once more in the Parkland nook, which he had once called his own, and which would now, forevermore, be theirs.
Delia, what are you thinking about? You're so very quiet.
I was thinking about you and the trees here and the birds that'll soon be singing high over our heads.
What were you thinking about these things?
That these are the things that bring forgetfulness, the things that should be forgotten, that they bring peace and contentment, and that they bring love, too. They bring the wonderful love I've found in you. Does it seem very strange that I love you? I don't think it's strange, but most people would, I suppose. It's very strange.
Why is it strange, Delia?
Because love is strange. Strange and most wonderful. I was so afraid I'd never find it. Oh, I was so afraid. And it would have been so terrible not to have found it.
It's love that you've been looking for?
Yes. Oh, look. It's dawn now. I must go. I must go.
Delia, wait. Delia! Delia!
She was gone. Panic seized Robert Mason. What if she should disappear? He set out after her. He had to run. She went so swiftly. No sound escaped her. She seemed filled with a burning, urgent need to reach her goal, whatever that might be. Then she stopped for an instant, turned, ran up the steps of a house, and disappeared. Robert Mason followed quickly. He tried the door. It was locked. Then, as he was about to knock at the door, it opened. And there stood before him a man whose manner and small satchel marked him as a medical man.
Oh, excuse me, I was...
Well, young man, and what are you doing in this house at this hour?
Oh, I beg your pardon, sir. It was the young lady who just ran
a
in here.
A young lady here?
Yes, sir. You must have passed her as she went in.
No, no, I passed no young lady.
But you must have. I saw her come in here. She must live here.
I passed no young lady, young man. The young lady who lived here lives no longer. Last night, just at twilight, she died.
Robert Mason stood for a few moments without motion. Then he slowly descended the steps and walked away. Within a few moments, he was in the park again. He felt no wonder at the strangeness of the thing that had happened to him. He felt only rage at a cruel fate which had given him so great a gift, only to snatch it back. But with it was mixed a great gratitude toward a generous and kind fate which had taken her and yet had granted to her yearning heart its dearest wish, the knowledge of love. At last the young man rose, gazed intently at the little parkland nook, as though to burn each detail into his mind. Then he turned and left it forever.
This is Jim Amici again. I regret that we're running out of time and that we have to bid our farewells to our three wonderful guests, Phil Bredow, Jackie Gleason, and Anita Louise. It was a great pleasure having the three of you visit us.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, three nice thank yous, and you're welcome to all of you. When will we four meet again?
In thunder, in lightning, or in rain?
When the hurly-burly's done, when the battle's lost and won.
Fair is foul, and foul is fair.
Well, leave us now, get off the air. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Phil Bredow, Anita Louise, and Jackie Gleason in Macbeth. And how it got on this program, I don't know. Well, so long, you three wonderful people.
All right, Joe.
Now this visit to Hollywood's open house comes to a close. Our music is under the direction of Ray Block. Our script is by Lee Shane. The program is produced and directed by Ray Green. This is Jim Amici inviting you to Hollywood's open house next week at this same time.